But to each one of us, grace has been given. Grace as gift and gifts through grace. Now, Paul, the great boundary crosser who refused to be confined socially, is seeking to build new communities, new churches, in which there is neither Jew nor Christian, slave nor free man, male nor female, no longer any them and us. And Paul reached this really remarkable place by understanding what it is that he had received. The gift of Christ's forgiveness, bringing freedom from sin, from guilt, from anxiety, from fear of what might happen in the next world. He knew that this gift was unearned and unmerited. It was one that forced an entirely new calibration of worth. In the first century, AD gifts were given to the worthy and to the fitting, either on moral or on social grounds, and such gifts created strong links or ties within society. They were carefully distributed to reflect the giver's values. And this belief, not surprisingly, was reflected in turn onto God, who surely gave firstly to the pious, to the virtuous, to the rational, that is, to the educated male, and any of higher status. But Paul had understood that the Christ gift was given without regard for worth. And it's a fact that spills out through his letters, just a little bit here, but in Romans a lot, and also in Galatians. And what he was saying effectively was, you've got it wrong. You are worth it because God counts you worthy. That's something to remember in the barrage of ads, isn't it? You are worth it because God counts you worthy. Now, what gives you, what gives me a sense of our worth? Just think about it for a moment. Every sphere of life has its symbolic capital, attributes or achievements that give people worth or suggest they will give people worth. So honours, certificates, letters, probably all sorts of other things you can think of too. And what then happens if these attributes count for nothing in the end? What if the divine gifts are given to everyone? Big social implications. At the very least, there is a devaluation of the previous regime in quite a subversive way. And what is burned off, metaphorically speaking, if I can put it like this, at the altar rail is not just pride and achievement, but the norms by which these achievements are measured. New communities, new churches are being formed, said Paul, and they are to walk in line with the truth of the good news. No wonder he was cross with Peter when the council in Jerusalem sought to revert to the old ways. What about us in the 21st century? Do we fully embrace the understanding that we are all equal before God, before Christ? Or do we still tend, just a little bit of course, to repackage the gifts of God within our own social and cultural values? Well, an interesting example is perhaps, if you can bear to, think about Christmas gifts for a moment. How do you decide? How do I decide on my gift giving? We make choices, don't we? Because we can't give gifts to everyone. We discriminate, I think, according to the closeness of the relationship. But the point really is that we all use some system of distinguishing gifts. and hence perhaps our struggle to embrace the notion that one spiritual gift is equal to another, for it is. Paul lists five gifts in this part of his letter: apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. Elsewhere, others, in 1 Corinthians 12, for example, wisdom, knowledge, faith, healing, special powers, prophecy, discernment, speaking in tongues, interpretation, and elsewhere a few more, and many, many that are not even on the list. Different, but equal in significance. And it's Paul's utterly brilliant image of gifts as part of the body, working together to enable the whole, that remains, I think, the most compelling in convincing us that difference is not just necessary, but to be embraced. A church cannot become mature simply by being tolerant. It must work to build each and every person up. And everyone, each one of us, has a role in this. The principles of reciprocity, mutuality, and speaking the truth in love. For it's no good if the eye always wants to be the helper and not the helped, for example. If it does not allow the foot to return the favor, the body of the church will quite literally go nowhere, if I can put it that way, or wobble back and forth upon the waves, definitely mixing metaphors there. The principle of mutuality runs throughout Pauline social ethics. A one-way, unilateral gift relationship is never held up. Genuine mutuality within a church must exist if there is to be a flourishing, as it must between church, church to church, and church to community. And then there's the true speaking in love. That's a challenge, isn't it? Because it's hard to do. Hard to do whilst holding relationships together. But we are to imitate God. And because it's Trinity Sunday, just think for a moment of God as Trinity. And I've used Richard Rohr's reflection of the Trinity as a divine dance. That's the title of his book, and I do recommend it. Rohr describes the Trinity as a circle, an endless circle of mutuality moving between Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, forming one God. And he explains this by reflecting that just as the orbiting structure of the three particles, I hope there are no scientists here, proton, electron, and neutron form one body, the atom, so the movement of love and joy and peace between the three persons of the Trinity form one God. Think movement, think circle, think dance, think anything other than static image, which is what makes it so tough to understand the three in one. And just remind myself, every building block in creation is made up of atoms, all in a circle, all in a dance of three. Follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love. For this is how we grow. This is how we find renewal. Take care in how we live, says Paul at verse 15. Take care over what we are filled with. To do this, we need to know ourselves, to understand what's God's will and his purpose is for us, individually first of all, and then as a church, verse 17. Now you may recognize this list. This is Rick Warren's shape and his suggestion that these are the custom capabilities we need. Spiritual gifts, very difficult to be sure of our own spiritual gifts. Ask somebody whose opinion you trust, somebody who knows you quite well on that one. Heart, what are the things that you love to do? And let them just come off the top of your head. I mean, I love to read, I like to watch ballet if I can. Here, I love going to the Ashmolean. I adore film, but equally, I quite like a bit of rubbish TV as well. So it's not all sort of splendid stuff. Think about what you really love. Abilities. What are you good at? Or because we're British, what are you quite good at? Are you quite good at organizing things? At making things? At communicating? At making things better? At bringing people back? Personality. What's your nature? Are you led by the head, thinking all the time? Are you led by your heart, jumping out? Are you led by your guts? You know if you're the latter because it tends to twist a bit. Are you an extrovert or an introvert? And then there's all the Myers-Briggs or even the Enneagram to help you out there. Know your personality. And then lastly on this list, experience. What has shaped you? What have been the joyful times in life? What have been the really hard times? Dispiriting times? Think schooling. Think job. Think relationship. All these things come together to make us who we are. Paul ends this section by saying, well, he doesn't say this, actually, I'm paraphrasing. We can fill ourselves with all sorts of things. And we do, don't we? All sorts of things. Most of which, or many of which, will harm us if consumed in excess. Even overeating can do us no good. For the Ephesians, excess alcohol was a problem. And it's one that remains very much around us for some. But there are other things we either need to consume in moderate amounts or shouldn't consume at all. What about things like bitterness? What about envy? We can be filled with all sorts of things. Instead, says Paul, as it shows on the screen, be filled with the Holy Spirit. Seek to know the love, the joy, the peace of God in your life. Ask him to fill you with the Holy Spirit again and anew. And be thankful. Give thanks. Thanks when things go well. You won't give thanks when they go badly, but give thanks that you can hope and trust that they will come right again. These, I think, are the things that grow us into a mature church and keep us within God's renewing hand, within his care. And perhaps we can finish by taking a few moments of quiet and of stillness now to make this our own personal prayer. Holy Spirit, fill me anew.